sometimes we are afraid of asking these questions because of what we're going to uncover and how much more time we're going to need to spend with the patient that we don't have. There have been times when I had to have the patient think, give her some thinking time, go on to see other patients, then come back and give the person the time that she needs because she just has uncovered some horror memories, horrible memories that she does need to work with. Luckily for us here in Durham, we have resources for mental health care and mental health access and counseling for Latino patients, which is a wonderful thing to have. But it has been my motto to never let a moment that is so important go unchecked or unasked for. If I see that there is a show of that there's something there, I need to ask the question and I need to go forward. Because otherwise I'm not providing the right care. You asked me earlier about social determinants of health. This is a tremendous social determinant. Having been an immigrant, having come through, coming from a life of significant despair, living in the slums of some other country, for which a person decided that it was important enough to move to the United States, I owe them the time to hear their story.
So I'm a family physician, and I'm chair of the Department of Community and Family Medicine and direct the Duke Center for Community Research. Actually, we have a fair amount of data about health outcomes in North Carolina and Durham and how they vary by race, ethnicity, and gender. And there are a number of areas in which we're doing pretty well and quite a few in which we're not. So we do a couple of things. By the way, the first one is actually not to act, but to listen. So the first part of it is trying to understand what are the reasons for the disparities and how do different people view those. And what we find is that there are a variety of reasons for disparities, understandings for them, and perspectives on them. And then what we try to do is work with the folks who are burdened by the disparities to find solutions that work for them, which often can take us into some interesting spaces. Well, the Accountable Care Act has quite a number of tools or levers that we can use to help reduce some of those disparities. But I also don't think we have to wait for it to act. It certainly will help us. It gives us funding streams for some of these. But there's actually more than enough reason to act now. I mean, the disparities, besides being a moral or ethical issue, actually represent a cost to us, and a social cost, a human cost, a financial cost. Because when people are ill, they can't work. Or if they can't work as well, they die young, they can't take care of their loved ones. So it's a cost on society that we don't have to wait for the federal government or state government to act on.
You know, you don't have to go to these huge lengths to puzzle this out. It's right here under your nose if you choose to look at it. And you know what? If you leave out any compassionate, ethical, blah, 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 you know, if people don't want to hear about that, hear about the money. It's a whole lot cheaper if you help people get their $5 prescription for their blood pressure than treating them after they've had their stroke.
What do we do to work around the challenges? I think we need to engage our local Latino community. We need to talk to the people, maybe have focus groups, and hear their voices, and hear the women, and hear the men, and hear the leaders, and be cognizant that sometimes the leaders may not really know their communities themselves. And find out what is it that they think we could do to have better healthcare access, to have better communities. I think often they have come from communities that work together in a very socialized, into large groups, and unfortunately they come to the United States and become more locked into smaller places. They don't have so many resources. What can we do to help people become a community instead of a large group of solitary, lonely individuals, but a larger group that helps each other and works with each other and trusts each other?
The deeper part of it is what I would call trying to create an atmosphere of of inclusion and acceptance, and actually not just acceptance, but enjoyment of diversity, that we're a diverse community, and out of that diversity comes the strength of different views and perspectives, and that's what makes us rich and successful, rich culturally, maybe financially too. So it's celebrating that inclusion rather than feeling like this is a health system of only one group. The other part is actually helping people learn about the different communities that make up our own community. So it's not just cultural language competence, but cultural competence and celebration of the differences that sometimes separate us and sometimes bring us together.
I think also one of the challenges that some of our patients encounter is a culture that doesn't understand or doesn't have time to ask where people are coming from. Many of our patients that may be now working in the clinic, in the cleaning industry here, they may be cleaning our hospital or working as the lower paying jobs as medical assistants, have had very high education in their countries of origin, and that they left their country of origin at times because of distress, because of political unrest, because of not seeing a future, or because they wanted to give their children a better future. There's something that I talk about, the low expectations, and it has been something I have for years put a lot of emphasis and attention to, is anytime I see a child that is a member of the minorities, whether he is a Latino, an African-American, I will always ask, what are they doing and how are they doing in school? And because I'm asking that question, I have often had parents that come and tell me about how their children are doing, and I'm always encouraging them to finish high school. And what I have seen is a tremendous problem with teachers and principals having significantly lower expectations towards these children than they do for others, and deciding it is okay if they finish school, if they not finish school. So then we end up with graduation rates that are much lower among the Latino children in comparison to white children.
One of the things that I would share if a provider needed some advice or insight into better serving or better understanding the Latino community, I would say that often what we experience in our care management program is that providers tend to not understand and therefore underestimate the cultural influences that affect a Latino patient's healthcare practices and beliefs. For example, oftentimes a patient will go into a provider's office and the provider speaks a little bit of Spanish and the patient speaks a little bit of English. So the provider chooses to use his or her very limited ability to speak Spanish and the patient's very limited ability to speak and comprehend medical terms in English to have a conversation without the use of a professional interpreter. And what I would suggest always to a provider, that if you are not a proficient Spanish speaker and especially proficient in medical terminology, that you should use a trained interpreter to facilitate accurate communication between you and the patient.
Because if you live in Durham and you become sick and you don't get well quickly, you're likely going to be seen by a Duke provider. So for better or worse, and I think it's for better, Duke and Durham are joined together. We grew up together. We're not going anywhere, either of us. So we've had the university and health system leadership early on realize that to the extent that Durham flourishes, Duke flourishes, and the extent that Durham doesn't flourish, Duke suffers, and that we need to actually work together. And that's why years ago we started the LASH program, because we realized we're seeing more and more new Latino members of our community that we really didn't know much about and weren't actually effectively reaching. Same with the Care for the Uninsured, the ACCESS program, that we could wait till people are sick and go to the emergency room. It's actually better for everybody. If we reach out to people before that and help them stay healthier, it benefits everybody. But I think that's really been the enlightened leadership on both the community and the health system and university side, as well as just the fact that, you know, we're side by side, enmeshed together, growing up together, and that our fates are bound together.